Okay.
All right. I used a line the other day at the end of a show with Dr. Paul Offit, who is a pediatrician and a vaccine co-developer.
I know him very well.
Nice guy at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And I ended the show by saying, "And doctor, much like measles, we'll be back." That was a pretty funny way to end the show. But today we're discussing an article that you wrote for the New York Times entitled, "My Patient Doesn't Do Vaccines." You say the visit started out ordinary enough. A new patient, a healthy man in his late 30s, obviously hip, who hadn't seen a doctor in years. Well, that doesn't surprise me because he's in his 30s. When we got to preventative health, something I and obviously you advocate, I, meaning you, Dr. Daniel Ofree, recommended a flu shot. He politely declined by saying, "I don't do vaccines, doctor." What is that all about, and how did we get to this point where people won't accept what I consider to be a pretty reasonable suggestion? And by the way, disclaimer here, I had a flu shot a couple months ago, and I guess it worked. Something worked. What's going on, doctor?
A lot of what people respond to, with all kinds of facts, and vaccines is one aspect, politics is another, has to do with their emotions and philosophy more than facts per se. So it's clear that vaccines, if you look at the great scientific advances of the 20th century, vaccines are up there in the top 10 of lives saved.
Well, actually, from a public health standpoint, they're up there with the top three: clean water, sanitation, and vaccines.
And nothing comes close to them in terms of eradicating smallpox and polio, diphtheria, things that people die from routinely have all but been eradicated. So the facts are quite clear that vaccines as a whole have had profound benefits in terms of lives saved for humanity.
However, so let's get back to our 30-year-old healthy man in his late 30s. You say you glanced at the clock, debating whether or not I should wade into these troubled waters. I added the word trouble. Given that we are knee-deep in flu season, the flu shot conversation comes up at every single visit. So you said to him, well, tell me why you won't take vaccines, and how did he reply?
Well, he really spoke about, you know, in a sense, what he saw as the scientific concerns, that there are chemicals and autism, and he didn't say, I don't like them, I'm emotionally against them. He just said, I don't put that stuff in my body, those toxins, chemicals, preservatives.
Whoa, wait, chemicals, preservatives, are we talking about thimerosal?
Well, that would be one of them.
And you very logically whipped out probably the same document that I have in my hand from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Vaccine Safety, and that preservative, which contained mercury, has been out of vaccines for the most part, except for some flu vaccines, since 2001, almost 15 years.
Even without any evidence of it causing any harm, but they say as an abundance of caution, and probably to alleviate concerns. I mean, thimerosal is used all over the place. But what I find interesting about this patient, many patients, is that even with those facts, it's something that it's not convincing in the way that other facts might be. Again, because there's, I think, a psychological and emotional issue more than a scientific one. Now, listen, of course, vaccines have side effects. Everything does. Every medication you take crossing Second Avenue has side effects, and you weigh the risk and the benefit of getting across the street versus getting hit by the Second Avenue bus.
Yes, but it's not just the bus that will hit you. What about looking at the big picture in terms of the greater good and public health? I think that concept, frankly, has been lost.
Yes, and that's another important concept that's come up a lot in the wake of the recent measles resurgence, through the Disneyland exposure. And it shows that if enough people don't get vaccinated, the level of herd immunity goes down. And so if someone brings in measles from another country, which is what we think happened in that case, it can spread quickly because...
Here's a quote from the LA Times. "The index patient in the three-month-old Disneyland outbreak was probably exposed to the measles overseas and then came to the amusement park right off the airplane. in Anaheim while contagious, according to the CDC. This particular strain of measles is identical to one that spread through the Philippines last year, where it sickened about 58,000 people and killed 110. Not that the person who spread the measles was from the Philippines, but it was acquired someplace.
Yes, and so the problem is that then if only one person is not vaccinated in the crowd, that one person gets sick,
right.
and then it's done. But if many people are not, it begins to spread. And the real problem is that it ends up spreading to people who are medically not able to be vaccinated, infants, people with immune system issues, people undergoing chemotherapy often can't get immunized for medical reasons, and they're particularly susceptible. And, of course, the highest death rate is amongst these populations, the very young, the very old, immunocompromised. So these patients rely on herd immunity to protect them because it generally can't get spread. If everyone around you is vaccinated and a traveler from the Philippines comes in, it won't spread far. But as we see, it doesn't take much
to let it
spread.
In fact, here we are in beautiful Portland, Oregon, and Oregon has the lowest rate of vaccination in the United States. I think we're at 6.8% of the population is unvaccinated. You wrote a book entitled, fabulous book, by the way, entitled What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Why don't we call this What Patients Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Decision-Making When a Patient is with a Doctor? I mean, that's what all this boils down to, doesn't it?
I entirely agree. And even if he couldn't articulate the data, he had this idea, and it's not an incorrect idea, that you shouldn't put dangerous things in your body. You should avoid toxins and chemicals, and that's all correct. But it's weighed against the greater good of vaccines. I mean,
right.
To some degree, we have the bliss of ignorance. Having not lived through polio or
exactly.
Smallpox and diphtheria, this pop generation has not seen the horrors of these diseases. I mean, ask any one of the tens of thousands of people who are walking around today or limping around today from polio life was like. And there is not a parent out there who would have turned down the polio vaccine when it became available. They lined up, even allowed their children to participate in the large clinical trials.
So with all this logic, doctor, did you finally convince your patient who doesn't, quote, do vaccines to do what?
He didn't take the flu vaccine. Now, of course, in this case, the flu vaccine is not the highest priority vaccine in general. But, you know, its effectiveness is moderate. The disease, at least for healthy people, can be mild. Though it can be, you know, you can miss a week of work of being quite miserable. The people who've had influenza will tell you it's not a pleasant way to spend a week or two.
Dr. Ofri, how can people learn more about your wonderful work? And
I archive all of my articles on DanielleOfri.com, DanielleOfri, DanielleOfri.com. It's also all archived in the New York Times under the Well blog.
And your book is What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Do you have a new book coming out sometime?
I am working on a new book loosely titled What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear.
Perception and Reality. Oh, that's great.
Yes, I am looking for doctor-patient pairs who are willing to both be interviewed about some of their communication challenges. If anyone is interested in participating, they can email me through my website if they and their doctor would be interested in being interviewed. And, of course, anonymity is assured.
Everyone has raised their right hand who listens to the show. We've all been HIPAA-ized. But you're really talking about health literacy, which is really fascinating stuff. But what people hear and how they translate that into action or not is really fascinating stuff. Dr. Ofri, thank you so much for joining us today on Body Language on Radio MD.
It's been a pleasure. We'll talk soon.
And much like measles, we'll be back.